Hello again. It's been 2 years and the world has changed entirely and the world is just the same. Welcome back, Susie. It's lovely to be podcasting with you again.
It's heaven to be podcasting with you again. So fun. So, hello. I feel like I probably need to explain. Well, no, I don't need to explain. I want to explain. Why is it that we were cantering along and then all of a sudden we ground to an unseemly halt and we're never heard of again for 2 years at least. So what happened was I had a nervous breakdown and I did it proper spectacular style.
You did?
I did. And it was basically, well, it was post-COVID and apparently there is a thing called post-COVID psychosis, which definitely lent a hand, but also fundamentally it was massive overwork. And I have to tell you two quite shocking stories, Maggie.
Please do.
I find them shocking. So the first is that I can smugly announce to you that I've done my accounts before the very last second. I've done my books. I've surrendered them to the tax man for all the good that will do him. And discovered when I was putting the bits of paper away that I'd still got the bits of paper from 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I keep my diary as a record as well as all the other bits of paper. And I looked through the diary. Oh my God. I thought when I had a breakdown and I looked at my life and I knew that I was such an idiot. I knew that I'd been on the brink of a breakdown for probably 2 years. Mm-hmm. Because I'd just been working so hard and I just literally never gave myself a break. Mm. And just quickly as a rambling aside from the what I discovered 10 years ago thing, that, you know, if you were a student of mine over the last year that I taught, which was 2021, I get a bit mixed up with dates, every single workshop that I ran, I told my participants that they were going to have a compulsory rest in the middle of the workshop. So we had 45 minutes for lunch, or sometimes even I think I gave them half an hour for lunch, and then at least a half an hour compulsory rest where I recommended that they literally lay down and rested. Did I rest? Did I bugger? Even that half an hour I would spend making sure that I'd got the afternoon all sorted out in my head and all the things I needed and that there was more tea and more biscuits and, you know, yada yada. But the spirits were saying to me all year, so loudly, remember to rest, remember to rest, remember to rest.
You were talking about it in the podcast.
Was I?
Yes, yeah, you were. You know, that we need to rest. We were agreeing on it, and but we didn't.
No, I didn't rest. And I didn't remember to rest. And I didn't do, you know, rest as radical action against the patriarchy, because we are defined in the patriarchy and in consumerism by our productivity, etc., etc., etc. I just didn't do it. Anyway, so I knew I'd been working too hard for about 3 years. So I found this diary from 10 years ago, just as bonkers. I looked through it and the things I was, even in just any given day, I was doing about 3 days worth of work in a day. And again, like the year before I had the breakdown, just there were no days off.
None at all.
Well, 10 years ago, yes, a few. I wasn't working so many weekends. Mm. But more recently, I remember looking at my diary, acknowledging it was madness, but also thinking, oh, but I love it.
Yes.
You know, this is barely work. Mm-hmm. I love it. It's what I'm here to do. 10 years ago, I think I was clearer that it was work, but also I had a lot on. I was supporting somebody who needed lots of hospital visits and doing loads of driving to and from hospital appointments and all the rest of it. You know, it was just nuts, absolutely nuts. And then just to make sure that I really got the message, the spirits were then directing me, look over there, Susie, on that shelf that you haven't looked at for probably years. What is that? Could it be an old notebook? Oh, look in there, Susie. Notebook from 2007. Mm-hmm. in italic, not italics, what are they called?
Capitals?
No.
Oh, inverted commas.
Inverted commas, so speech marks. Message from the spirits. Dear Susie, you need to learn to rest and dissolve. This is vital. 2007, for fuck's sake. What a knickerhead.
Yeah, but... yes, and that's how we can be teachers, because we're only half a step ahead than everybody else.
I think I'm a bit behind, not ahead.
Well, yeah, okay, but at least you've realised it now, and you probably won't make that error again.
No, I don't think so.
And you can teach it with a profound knowledge and wisdom.
I hope so.
I'm sure so.
What an idiot. But I really looked into it, and I must say, the conclusion I have come to so far is that there are two, maybe probably three actually, really good reasons why I work that hard. The first is obviously within the patriarchy we are defined by our productivity, that is our value. I was brought up by a family who very much value, well, one side of my family, my dad's side of the family, very much value work. And even though it was quite unusual for women of her generation, my grandmother worked all her life. She was a physiotherapist and a really well-respected one. So there was nothing in me that said, you've got any choice other than to work hard, you know, from the moment you leave education to the moment you hang up your slippers. But also, I have, for the last 30 years, been self-employed.
Yes, me and too.
Yeah.
It makes a difference.
It does make a difference. It.
Well, no paid holidays.
No paid holidays, no paid if you're ill.
No, and you also have to not jump to other people's timetables, but adapt to when other people who are employed can come to you, which means a lot of weekend and evening work.
It's true. And then, also, I had three children quite close together. At one point, I had three kids under five. And again, when you're a mum, especially if you're... This is a bit of an overstatement, obviously, and it's perhaps a bit cruel, but I was almost a kind of a single mum from the off in a way.
Yeah.
Even though, you know, their dad was there, he wasn't a very participatory parent. And that doesn't mean he doesn't absolutely adore them and love them. And he's an amazing dad now.
But it wasn't in his culture to be a participatory.
No.
And
so when you've got three children under five or just, you know, three little boys, they're quite full on, no one else is caring for them. Again, you can't get ill, you can't have a holiday.
No.
There is no time to stop. You just keep on going. And I think I just kept on going at that pace from that moment.
Yes.
And whatever it was that needed doing, I just carried on.
Yes, because the neural pathways in your brain locked into that's what you do.
Yeah.
And it takes huge effort of free will to step out of that. And usually it does take a crisis.
Yeah. So, dear listener, whatever you're doing, do it more slowly.
Do rest.
Have a rest.
Possibly please. The only reason I'm still sane is because I have for so very long insisted on a Sabbath.
Yes.
One day a week. And it's still really hard to do, even after all these years. And nowadays I do have to keep Messenger on because I have a kind of Facebook parish. So if anybody desperately needs me, that's a different matter. So I still will have Messenger on. So I still have to, if there's the ding, I still have to go and look at it. However, over Christmas, I was really amazed at how easy it was to take 10 days clear off. And, oh, it was so beautiful. And, of course, being a vicar and also being a broadcaster, you don't usually get Christmas off.
No, I bet.
In fact, Christmas is usually the busiest time. And yeah. I would usually do Christmas Day broadcasting, including getting up at 4 a.m. to get to Plymouth for 5 a.m. to start at 6 a.m. with the broadcast. But no, now I don't have to do that. And it's I suppose I'm sort of semi-retired.
Yeah.
And the cataclysmic change for me in the last 2 years is that my mother died. I don't know if she'd already died when we finished the last podcast.
I remember talking about the fact that she died on the podcast.
That's right. But the fallout from her death is extraordinary because it is definitely a karmic release. There was a karmic relationship between us. And I can look at my life in Saturnine patterns of 29 years of this and that and the other. And she died on the Saturn return of my marriage to my second husband, which was the time where I had the lesson to learn about being broke.
Right.
About living without money.
Yeah, yeah.
And how to live without money. And that has cleared. Mm. And the feeling of that clearing has been really, really interesting about picking up a new life. Very much shadows of the old life again, but there's still a new impulse, and I think we're both coming here today with a new impulse, having learned a bitter lesson.
Okay, so tell me more about your new impulse.
Well, I do too much too because I'm too scattered.
Yeah.
I have too many different things to do. I have a dear friend who is a celebrant, does weddings and funerals, and that's pretty much her life. And she does tons of weddings and funerals. I very rarely do weddings and funerals, but I do weddings and I do funerals and I do teach Kabbalah and I do write books and I do write articles and I do help at the community kitchen and I do other things. So you can see I've got about 8 or 9 things in different directions. So part of me was sort of examining, is this the life you want, to be this scattered? Where do you want to give and where do you want to take? And also, I've got something, I can't pronounce it, called Dietrichen's syndrome or something, which is a contracture in the hand. It's just
your little finger. Yeah.
So it pulls the little fingers in a bit like a claw. So I've been looking at saying, okay, so all those 29 years when I had the money issues, there became a grasping. Just hold on to whatever I could get. So it's about learning to let go of the grasping. And things like I would always take the food home after a wedding or a funeral if they didn't want it. I still don't like waste and I will counteract waste anytime I can. But it's the understanding of saying, you don't need this. You don't need to take this. You don't need to hold on to everything. And I gave up comedy. I gave up comedy in a rather magnificent way, I thought, though I do think God overreacted, because I said to him, I said, okay, I'm not getting anywhere with this. And I know I'm not getting anywhere with this, mainly because I will not travel far enough. I don't give myself the time to go to London and sleep on people's sofas. I'm getting too old for this shit aspect, you know. Yeah. And I thought, well, is there really any point in doing this apart from good expenses for my tax? I'm earning a little bit, but not much. And I thought, okay, I'm going to give this up. I'm going to give it up to God, to spirit, give it to the spirits, whichever terminology you want. It's the same end result. And say, do you want me to go on with this? Is this part of my work? Because if it is, I have to give it more time. And I got this sort of final gig in Hatherley. They were going to pay me £250, nice rate, to do a show at Hatherley Carnival.
Amazing.
So I was thinking, okay, well, that looks positive, but let's see what happens after that. And I do think it was God overreacting to kill the Queen.
Okay, because what happened?
It got cancelled.
Oh.
Well, of course it got cancelled. Lots of things got cancelled after the death of the Queen. And I thought, okay, that's a fairly large sign. And after that, nobody was offering me any comedy. So I said, okay, I'll give up. I'll completely give up. So I did. Did I miss it? Sort of. But again, it was about trying to consolidate what do I really, really want to do. And what I really, really want to do is teach Kabbalah, because it's just my pathway, my pattern into the divine. And I know it helps people damaged with religion.
There's an expression.
Well, God, everybody's damaged by religion, because most religion is fast food religion.
Yeah.
And it's I'm right, you're wrong. And that's just basic fast food, kindergarten, two-year-old rubbish, frankly.
Yeah.
And with the classes I teach, I can actually help people unpick stuff in the Bible, as you know, because if I always say you have to pull out the sword that went in.
Mm-hmm.
And if the sword that went in was Christianity or Judaism or Islam, that's the sword you have to deal with.
Yeah.
You can't just say, I'm going to cover it with a pink throw and go off and be a Buddhist, because that wound's still there.
Yeah.
So that's kind of my job. So you can tell how passionate I am about that. And I'm still doing that, and I'm doing it at a much greater depth, because giving commitment to that has meant that my meditations have brought so much more through. And I've been guided to read so many books and then experience them. That's one of the things that you taught me, which is the value of experiential spirituality.
Mm.
You know, you don't read it and then teach it. You do it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, please.
You do it.
Yeah.
You really do it. So that gave me a greater depth, and also the freedom from this pullback energy of my mother's, of you may not succeed, you may not do this. Mm. That has dissolved with her death, and I've done a lot of work around forgiveness for a lot of people, and that's worked.
Great.
That's really marvelous, but it's hard work. You've got to have the discipline to do it. And then suddenly, out of the blue, I got invited over to Tennessee last year to teach at Unity Churches,
mm-hmm.
which was really lovely. And I thought, well, okay, let's go and have the adventure. It won't earn enough money to pay for itself, but you never know. And then suddenly, out of the blue, one of the people who was inviting me over said, well, we have a Unity Ministers retreat, 300 Unity Ministers in North Carolina, and we'd like you to do the keynote. And I went, yeah, because that, apart from anything else, that pays very nicely, thank you.
Ooh.
And they said, we want you to do comedy. And I was going, so then I basically said, well, if you want an hour's comedy, it's this price, to put them off. And they said, fine. So I thought about this, and I thought, okay, you're calling me back into comedy, in which case, why are you calling me back now, and what do you want me to give to it?
Mm.
And I just got such a clear answer, which is you've been trying to be clever in your comedy.
Mm-hmm.
You haven't told people about your life, which is hysterical. So, you know, I've now got, so I thought, okay, I'll give it a go. And I worked on this hour's show, and I was really nervous about it. And I mix and match, because these were ministers. I did, many, many years ago, I went to a talk by Magnus Magnusson, who used to do a mastermind the Icelandic guy. And I worked with him on Pebble Mill at One. Very interesting man indeed. And he did this talk about the power of journalism. He said, you have the power to make the stars bow down for pity.
Oh, there's an expression.
I know. And I thought, okay, I'm going to use this. And I did in that hour, I did half an hour of comedy and half an hour of stories of deep miracles that had happened to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was ministers.
Yeah.
And it really worked, because it lifted them up and opened their hearts and then told them about the depth of faith and miracles that can be in there. And I came out of it and I was just on such a high and thought, okay, I have to do stories of my life. That's what I need to do.
This I can totally believe. Yeah,
yeah.
Your life is pretty mad.
That's crazy. It's not mad. Okay. My spiritual teacher told me very clearly, you're not mad, you're crazy. There's a difference.
There's a difference. Okay, fair. I accept this.
So now, and also, God bless her, now my mother's dead, I can include her in the comedy.
Mm.
And genuine things that she said. I do comedy about Middle England, you know, the part of England that always thinks it's better than it should, you know, it's better than it is, as in wanting to be locked into the patriarchy, to be perfectly honest.
Mm.
And how my mother, when I told her I was going to be ordained as an independent priest, said, but what am I going to tell my friends?
I know, I remember you saying that. Oh my goodness.
I'm going to be a sodding vicar. Yes, but the wrong kind of vicar. So I put that in the comedy, which is basically saying, well, you can tell them I'm a crack dealer.
Yes.
You know, you can tell them I'm an international terrorist, or you can tell them I shop at Trago Mills. Your choice. Yes. And I did say something like that to her, and she said, don't be silly, dear, it's not that bad. So, you know, I'm now much more relaxed in the comedy. So I've learned by letting go for a couple of years as well.
Mm. Yeah. Cool. Well, I'm really hoping I've learned. I've definitely, it's funny, my focus to a degree in how is it that I'm going to learn to rest has been kind of twofold. On the one hand, I've really asked myself the question, what do you actually want to do? And
as I was, yes.
Yeah. And one of the answers to that that really blew me away, actually, was that having taught shamanism, you know, kind of witchy shamanism, for, I must have been teaching it for 15 years or something, suddenly the answer was, I don't want to do that anymore. Mm-hmm. It was really, really, really clear. No, teaching isn't the thing anymore. And I feel like that was, you know, you'd say it, that was the message from God. To me, yeah. That was absolutely clear from the spirits.
Yeah.
No, you've done that.
Yes.
And they were saying, you didn't do wrong. You did okay. You've done that. That is now not your job anymore.
You've moved to another quadrant of life.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
And what's been coming up for me is suddenly I feel, and it's great, after 2 years of obviously feeling a wide variety of emotions, most of which were pretty ghastly, frankly, I now feel like some little bulb under the soil, literally bursting with the kind of desire to pop forth for spring, because I feel so full of inspiration around new things to make. Mm-hmm. And so obviously I make drums, I make rattles, mm-hmm. I make sistrums, I make my fairy tambourines, but now there are all these variations on a theme and other ways of doing what I've already done, but I'm bursting with them. And that feels really exciting, because that's where I began. When I started making, it was with so much delicious delight in the kind of exploring of the materials, of what was possible, of what could be excellent, of, you know, what the spirits were calling forth. But I think possibly in the middle there somewhere I might have fallen into a bit of rut. And although, obviously, you know, I still loved it and I was still putting my whole heart into making what I made, I was making the same thing over and over and over again.
Gotcha.
To a degree.
Yeah.
And now it is going to be different, and there is, you know, there's going to be new offerings and entirely strange and new creatures, which I don't want to talk about yet.
No, don't.
But that feels really exciting. And then the other thing is I've probably got a slightly unhealthy obsession with my diary, in that I've gone from having a massive diary in which you could write absolutely loads to a really small, beautiful diary, which is the Forager's Diary by, I think the artist is Lou Tonkin and the forager is Liz Knight. I hope I've got those names right. It's not Lou Tonkin. It's
tell me later and I'll put it in the link.
Please put it in the link, because yeah. I feel horrible now to the artist, who's Isla Middleton, I think her name is. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful diary. So on the one hand, every time you turn a page, you've got this lovely inspiration of
what, like, you can forage now.
Yeah.
Yes.
And on the other page is a whole week just on one teeny page. So I've got about an inch and a quarter or something in which to write the day's activities. And when, at the moment, I had been, when I've got to four things on that page, I've been doing a squiggly line down the side, turning the page and refusing to put anything else in that week. Mm. But actually now, I've realised, even though we'll be living absolutely on the breadline, if you like, it's got to be three things. Because still sometimes I feel overwhelmed by how much I've got to do, or I don't feel like I've got the energy for it, or whatever. And that's leaving space for making. I'm not putting the making in those 3 days. But feeling really proud of myself, because so far I haven't betrayed a squiggly line. I haven't
well
crossed
done.
My squiggly
well
line,
well
which
done.
Is good, because I had tried the squiggly line thing before and just kind of put it there and then ignored it. And now I haven't. But also just feeling really, really clear that to live with only just enough and time to create, to sit and read, to go for, you know, really long walks if I want to sit in nature just really quietly and not feel, oh, but I can only be here for an hour because I've got to go and do this, blah, blah, blah. That's really worth it. It's really worth it for me. And I realise I'm in a really privileged position that I can, that between me and Fergus, there's enough. Mm. If I just do three whole days, there's enough. But we do live a very tiny little life, you know. We don't spend on anything, yeah.
We live a tiny life. And I've got a dear friend who's, he went to Bahrain and the Maldives. He works abroad. He's thinking of going to Washington, D.C. and all that. And I'm thinking, where do I want to put my money? We love doing the comedy over in America, but the rest of the trip in America was fairly ghastly because I was so much out of my element because I've changed so much. Yeah. I didn't like the food. It didn't do me any good. And I didn't like the energy, and I didn't have time to get out into nature and spend time. So I came back and said, well, if that's a book tour or something like that, I don't want one.
Yeah.
I don't want that. And also, one of the things that a kind of a gift you gave to me through your being ill, though I wouldn't put it that way, was that it was very clear to me from spirit, and it was probably your spirits or some of the other spirits, which was she can't do the morning singing now. So you must.
Oh, beautiful. Oh, God, that makes me so happy.
And it was amazing. And I tried the singing, and it's not me. The singing isn't me. So there came a point where I said, no, it's not the singing that's me. It's the prayer that's me. Mm. It's the blessing. And I have, every time I get in the car, and that's pretty much every day, or every time I walk the beagles, the blessings come pouring out, the gratefulness, the thank you, the honouring of the planet from heart of her core to the edge of her atmosphere and all the way around, and the honouring of the planets that hold us in the place in the solar system and the universe itself and all her peoples of earth, air, fire and water. And I can't not do it now.
Yay!
Woo-hoo! So now there's two of us at it, assuming that you're
back to that.
Yeah. But it was just, it was an honour to say, come Maggie, move in.
Oh, there's a space, so it has to be beautiful. Done. Yeah.
Because, you know, I wouldn't have been able to do that if I hadn't done this with you. And also we have a mutual friend, John Wadlow, John Down the Road, as I call him, who does wonderful work with people with fibromyalgia and PTSD through kinesiology and EFT. And if you're interested, contact me, because he doesn't charge. It's his way of giving back to the world for the blessings he's had. But he put me in touch with a dowser, because my tame dowser, that sounds like a terrible thing, the one I'd used for years to check out the house, has died, and he had every right to die. And John put me in touch with a chap called Richard Craigmore, who did some work on the house, and we talked. And I just thought, I have to know more about this. Mm. And I was invited by my friend who was in the Maldives to go out. He said, I can get you a really good package deal. I can get you a really good deal. Why don't you come out for a holiday on your own? You know, you're always talking about, you know, rest and all that. And I weighed up. I can train with Richard Craigmore this year, or I can go to the Maldives. And I thought, well, the Maldives takes more pollution to the planet.
Mm.
But working with Richard brings more healing to the planet. And since my former colleague, the dowser, died, people have started coming to me and saying, I don't know what to do. There's something going on. So I've been teaching myself to douse over maps.
Mm.
And I'm not good enough yet, but I'm okay. I've shifted energies. People have, you know, so I want to get more into that. And I wouldn't have probably done that if I could have referred people to you.
Sorry.
And I also want to thank you, because even though when you were still really quite ill, twice you contacted my beagle who'd run.
Yeah.
And twice you told her to go home. And twice she'd lost connection of where I was, because she'd run away from home.
Which away wasn't from near home. Enough home, yeah.
Yeah, and I couldn't sit there all afternoon because I had other things to do. Now as she runs away, I sit there all afternoon.
She's a fucker.
But I'm starting to also to work, say, okay, my heart to your heart, Safa, let's talk. My angels to your angels, you know, I want to learn to trust you, and I want you to learn to be trustworthy. And it's beginning to work, but it's a long journey.
Mm.
Especially with the hound.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, the hunt is so...
so wired
embedded into her.
Yes.
Yeah. Wired
into
her, absolutely.
Yeah.
Bless her cotton socks. Yeah, well, I'm glad you're not going to the Maldives.
I'm glad I'm not going to the Maldives. I mean, there's part of me that would just sort of like to go lie there and go, oh, sunshine, sea. But if I want to do that, I'm going to see my son in Cyprus.
Uh-huh. Yeah, fair.
Or I can go to the beach here.
Yeah, personally, so it's not I'll as be it's... waiting for summer to lie down on the beach. And
I suppose that's one good thing about global warming is that you get hot and you go to the beach. But
Yeah, I mean, well, as you know, I've been on an airplane for 25 years now, and doubt I ever will. I mean, I'm not saying I never will, because I know full well that if one of my sons moved to another country, I would get on an aeroplane.
Yes. Well, Tin had a diagnosis of cancer. Mm. It was actually during COVID, so we couldn't have gone. But if it hadn't been during COVID, I'd have been on those flights out.
Yeah.
And he got his miracle. Wasn't that wonderful?
Oh, it was amazing.
I told you about that, didn't I?
Yeah, did.
I still have this happy memory of contacting you with Skype, and you go, "What the fuck did you do?"
We've been half an hour.
We haven't said anything remotely important,
but
no. But we've had a wonderful catch up, and we can perhaps do something important next time. The gentlefolk who are listening, we are intending to do this podcast once a month now, not once a week, once a month. So we'll try and tie it to the seasons, and we'll see how we go. But thank you so much for coming back to us.
And for putting up with our grandiosity. You're just laughing that we think we might ever say anything important. But we will at least try to stick to being a vicar and a witch rather than just two old birds yattering away about...
There's nothing wrong with two old birds yattering away.
It's true.
Yeah, as long as we're not talking too much about Coronation Street.
Which neither of us watching. No, exactly. You'll have lost me. I have never seen a single episode. Anyway, yes, if you are listening, thank you for coming back, and we'll... Be back. We're back.
We're back.
It's very exciting.